Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading the excerpts from Saturday, January 2nd, Sunday, January 3rd, and Monday, January 4th. We'll begin this first half hour with a story from page 1 of Saturday's paper. First baby of the year, it says. Girl, 2021, born minutes apart. Annie Jo Busby, born to Clinton couple at 12:10 a.m. at BroMed. The initial Busby to have the last baby of 2020 in a Bloomington Normal hospital. She and her husband, Tyler, arrived at Carl BroMed Medical Center in Normal at 5 a.m. on Thursday. That was the first day I could be induced, she said. But Annie Jo was in no hurry to be born in 2020, and instead was the first 2021 baby in the Twin Cities at 12:10 a.m. Friday. She weighed 8 pounds and 7 ounces. I was in labor for 18 hours, and at about 10 minutes before midnight, I asked if anybody else was pushing, Amelia said. The nurses said no, and so I said, well, if she can't come in 2020, then I will be happy for her to be the first baby born in 2021. She will be Clinton by her sister Louise, who is 18 months old. My husband texted both sides of the family as soon as she was born because everybody had been waiting all night, she said. We'd been keeping everybody in the loop, and everybody was still awake. Still, the entire pregnancy was different. And because of the Tyler was only able to come to the appointments where they did sonograms. I had to do a lot on my own because of the restrictions, she said. I had to do most doctor appointments on my own, and even now, it will just be to the doctor because people, my husband, can't go in. I'm thankful that I already had a daughter because going through all of this on your own for the first time would probably be a little scary. Because they arrived, at the hospital a day before the ice storm hit, there were no travel worries. The family was trying to get some rest on Friday. The hospital staff and nurses were great because it was a long labor and they kept us calm and knew what we wanted to have and knew that they knew we wanted to have her on the 31st just because we wanted to have her here, Amelia said. But when it got to the point where we knew she could be the first baby, it was kind of even more exciting for everybody. The a gift basket from the hospital for having the first baby of the year. It took a bit longer, but OSF Med or Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center also recorded a birth on Friday. At 3:12 p.m., Oakland Caleb was born, weighing 7 pounds, 13.2 ounces. She is the new daughter of Joe and Damaris Caleb of Colfax. She will be welcomed home by her brother, Brecken. From the headline reads, Ice Storm Greets 2021, Hits Lines, Trees, and Travel. 1/4 of an inch of ice also delayed holiday golf tournament. A New Year's Day ice storm dropped more than 1/4 of an inch of ice on much of central Illinois Friday. Most of the reports we have received verified ice of 1/4 inch to 3/10 of an inch, said Alec Irwin, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln. First responders were called to numerous traffic crashes starting early Friday morning. Roads remained slick throughout most of Friday afternoon until the temperatures climbed above freezing and the ice melted. It seemed like overall road conditions have been pretty good shape, considering, Irwin said. Our just warm enough to help keep things from getting too icy with this one, which is good. The National Weather Service reported 3/10 of an inch of ice in Bloomington and Downs and 1/4 of an inch of ice in Lincoln. Chris Gielhart, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, measured an average of 1/4 of an inch of ice accretion on the trees in his front yard at 9:40 a.m. Friday, 2 miles northwest of Shirley. McLean DeWitt, Logan Woodford, Tazewell Cass, Mason Menard, Morgan Sangamon, and Scott counties were included in the ice storm warning area, which expired at 6 p.m. on Friday. It can be difficult to predict ice storms because small differences in the temperature profile at the surface can make a difference in how much ice we see, Irwin said. But with this storm, we felt up to the event because we had a good role model agreement on this one. Irwin said temperatures will be around 32 degrees Saturday, but an inch or two of snow is possible Saturday night. Power outages were reported throughout central Illinois. Ameren, Illinois reported more than 9,000 customers during the peak of the storm on Friday. Corn Belt Energy had a high of about Friday afternoon. Counties that reported power outages include McLean, Logan, DeWitt, Tazewell, Woodford, Livingston, Macon, and Ford counties. Ameren, Illinois activated its Emergency Operations Center to coordinate restoration of power outages. Crews reported with many of the outages caused by falling tree limbs that are impacting residential neighborhoods. Damage caused by ice and wind is particularly challenging to repair, said Dave Wakeman, Ameren, Illinois Senior Vice President of Operations and Technical Services. We have all available resources on the ground and working to quickly and safely restore outages from this winter weather event. Because of the holiday, most central Illinois residents were off work, and few events were scheduled. One flight, the American Airlines Flight 2998 to Dallas-Fort Worth, scheduled to leave at 3:30 p.m. from Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington, was canceled. An American Airlines flight 3056 to Dallas-Fort Worth was delayed 36 minutes Friday morning, but left at 9:50 a.m. Delta flight 5140 to Atlanta was scheduled to leave at 6 a.m., but was delayed until 10:30 a.m. Due to the ice storm, the town of Normal did not collect household garbage and recycling on Friday. This route will be collected on Saturday, but no bulky waste or brush will be collected on Saturday. These items will be collected the following week on the regular collection day. The 48th annual Snowbird Open event in Bloomington has been postponed and rescheduled for Sunday. All other event details remain the same. This year's event will be held at Prairie Vista Golf Course in Bloomington. Tee times begin at 9 a.m. and go until noon. Carts will likely not be available due to course conditions. The course and club till the event on Sunday. There have been other major weather events on New Year's Day. A major winter storm paralyzed much of the region during the first few days of 1999. Snow began falling across portions of central Illinois before noon on New Year's Day and continued at moderate to heavy rates for most of the following 24-hour period. Areas from Charleston southward also saw the snow mixed with rain or freezing rain at times. Once the snow ended, high winds developed, causing severe blowing and drifting and dangerous wind chills. The heaviest snow band extended from near Quincy to Virginia, then through the Peoria and Bloomington areas to Champaign, where 14 or more inches of snow was common. The weight of the heavy snow caused many roofs and porches to collapse, causing one death and one injury. Now from page A5 of Saturday's paper, the headline is 10 Stories to Watch in the New Year. If 2020 taught us anything, it's that we're living in wildly unpredictable times. And while we're in a new calendar, there are plenty of crucial issues carrying over from the last year. Here's a look at the 10 local issues to watch this year. DeWitt County Wind Farm. While the DeWitt County Board narrowly approved the county's first wind farm in July, opponents have not stopped fighting to halt the project. A newly seated county board may help the effort after four members are voted out of office in the November county board election. Challengers who ran on anti-wind farm platforms replaced them on the board in December. Enel Energy, formerly Tradewind Energy, is moving forward with plans to begin construction and operation of the wind farm in three northwestern townships near Waynesville and Wapella this year. The project could have 66 towers that can be no higher than 599 feet. Each turbine must have a building permit. Building permits are approved by a zoning officer, not the county board. Still, the new board has the potential to slow the construction of the wind farm, and several have pointed to two pending lawsuits as a reason to move cautiously. Number two, continued calls for change. Protesters in Bloomington Normal joined those across the country last year in calling for change after the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Local activists have indicated they intend to continue that work. "This isn't one march, it's a movement," said Radiance Campbell, one of the speakers at a July event in Miller Park in Bloomington, held by the local Black Lives Matter group. The group released a list of demands in June that included changes to policing and police funding, eliminating cash bail, expanding voter education and voting options, and investing in initiatives such as reentry programs for incarcerated people. Other groups also held marches and demonstrations aimed at addressing and dismantling the systemic racism, work they indicated they would continue to pursue in the future. Number three, impact of census and redistricting. The U.S. Census Bureau missed a year-end deadline for handing in the numbers, but said it would deliver a population count for each state early in 2021. Results will play into how Illinois is represented in Congress, how legislative maps are redrawn for the next 10 years, and how much states and communities receive in federal funding on a variety of fronts. Illinois is at risk of losing at least one of its 18 congressional seats based on the results. Estimates in recent years have shown the state has been losing population. Additionally, the Illinois General Assembly relies on the census results when it redraws the legislative and congressional maps. The process state lawmakers follow has drawn criticism from some residents and government reform groups who say it essentially results in lawmakers choosing their voters. The government also uses census data to determine distribution of $1.5 trillion in federal funding. Number four, Illinois State University president. Illinois State University will get a new leader in 2021 as President Larry Dietz plans to retire June 30th. Dietz announced his decision just before Thanksgiving break, saying the pandemic did not cause the decision, but did cause him to reflect on his plans. Dietz has spent 50 years in higher education, coming to ISU in 2011 and becoming president in March 2014. The university's Board of Trustees plans to hire a search firm to seek candidates for Dietz's replacement. Officials said a search committee will be formed using the same template that has been used for the past two presidential searches, with representatives from various constituencies across campus. Also taking shape in 2021 will be the tenure of new athletics director Kyle Brennan, who was introduced on New Year's Eve. Brennan, who was the University of Utah's chief operating officer and deputy athletics director for internal operations, replaces the retiring Larry Lyons. Number five, consolidated election. The 2020 consolidated election will be held on April 6th, giving voters an opportunity to weigh in on leadership in local governments and schools. In Bloomington, Mayor Terry Renner announced he would not seek a third term. Three candidates filed for the mayoral race: Mike Straza, a local entrepreneur, Jackie Gunderson, a former McLean County Board candidate, and Mboka Mwilabe, who currently holds the Ward 3 council seat, but recently announced he planned to not seek re-election in that role. There is also a certified write-in candidate, Misty Metros. Odd-numbered wards in Bloomington are on the ballot this year. Only Ward 1 has an unopposed incumbent, Jamie Matthey. The candidates for Ward 3 are Derek Mead, Sheila Montney, and Willie Horton Halbert. In Ward 5, Nick Becker and Patrick Lawler. And in Ward 9, Jim Fruin and Thomas Crumpler. There will be a primary election February 23rd for Ward 7, where Molly Ward was appointed recently after Scott Black resigned from council. Ward is seeking to hold the seat but faces challengers Kelly Crumpson, June Peterson Middlebrooks, Daniel Freeberg, and Coretta Jackson. In Normal, Mayor Chris Coos and challenger Mark Tira Tilley, a physics instructor at Illinois Wesleyan University, are set to face off again in April. Coos, owner of a test cycle shop and off and running, narrowly defeated Tira Tilley in the 2017 mayoral race with an 11-vote lead. Nine candidates will vie for three seats up for re-election on the Normal Town Council, which elects members at large. Council members up for re-election are Scott Preston, Kevin McCarthy, and Kimberly Cummings. Challengers, are David Paul Blumenschein, A.J. Zimmerman, Brad McMillan, Carl Sela, Steve Harsh, and Donna M. Toney. In Bloomington, District 87, four seats with four-year terms are up for re-election. Those on the ballot include current board members Elizabeth Fox Anvik, Bridget Beasley Gibson, and Charles Chuck Irwin, as well as two challengers, Fitzgerald Samedy and John Reed. McLean County Unit 5 will see new faces, as none of the three incumbents whose terms expire in 2021 filed for re-election. No more than three people from the same congressional township can serve on the Unit 5 school board. That means four people will be running for a single available seat in Township 24N, Range 2E. Janelle Sapar and Gavin Cunningham, both of Bloomington, and Erica Walston and Elise Albers, both of Normal. No more than two can be elected from Township 23N, Range 2E, which has Kentresa Coleman and Stan E. Gozer as candidates, or from Township 24N, Range 3E, in which Jeremy Dehati and Molly Emery are running. Heartland Community College has one incumbent and five challengers running for 2 6-year terms. They are incumbent Rebecca Ropp of Normal, along with Joshua Crockett, a former student trustee, Alan Broken and Katrina Parker, all of Bloomington, Jody Slothtower of Normal, and Cynthia Pulley of Downs. Two people are running for 1 2-year seat to complete the unexpired term, of Greg Chadwick, who died in September. They are Jim Drew of Lincoln, who was appointed to fill Chadwick's seat until the election, and Cecilia Long of Bloomington. Number six, vaccinations. More than 126,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccines were administered in Illinois in December, a process that is expected to continue in the new year. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are for emergency use and are being given to medical professionals first in the state. Not including Chicago, the state has delivered 108,225 vaccine doses of Pfizer and 161,400 doses of Moderna to hospitals throughout Illinois, according to the governor's office. An estimated 700 to 750 employees had received the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine at Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal by the end of the day on Tuesday. Half of the workforce at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center had received the first dose of the vaccine in Bloomington as of Saturday night. Additional vaccine clinics were to be held at both St. Joseph's and Carl Broman last week. Government health officials had talked about the goal of shipping enough vaccine by the end of the month to inoculate 20 million Americans, but it was unclear Thursday whether the U.S. would reach that mark. President-elect Joe Biden has vowed to ramp up the pace once he takes office on January 20th. In early December, Biden vowed to distribute 100 million shots in the first 100 days of his administration. Number seven, Rivian Automotive. While the coronavirus pandemic slowed construction on the Rivian Automotive plant, the company is progressing on its work to turn the former Mitsubishi Motors plant in Normal into a productive center for electric vehicles. Normal Mayor Chris Coos said Rivian has invested $125 million worth of construction at the facility. The company also recently announced that it is leasing 500,000 square feet of warehouse space at North Main Street and Carrick Road in Normal. The news keeps getting better and better, Kuz said recently. They're on a trajectory to make more of a splash than Mitsubishi did. The electric vehicle company launched sales in mid-November. Within just a week, it sold out of its first batch of special edition electric RIT pickup trucks and RIS SUVs, which are expected to roll off the production line for delivery as early as June. Orders continue to file in with expected delivery as early as January 2022. The company is also developing with Amazon an electric delivery vehicle. Number 8, economic growth. While many small businesses and restaurants have suffered heavy blows due to the pandemic and related operating restrictions, there are bright spots to watch this year. Ferrero announced in November that it would invest $75 million on an expansion of its candy plant at 2501 Bike Road in Bloomington. Mayor Terry Renner said the news also had spurred interest in a housing development on Bloomington's west side. The new manufacturing center will add 70,000 square feet to the existing 226,000 square foot Ferrero facility where Crunch and Snow Caps are assembled. A total of 383 employees work at the plant, and the project is expected to add 50 more. Raisinets, 100 Grand, Goobers, Ferrero Rocher, and other Ferrero products will be made there. Work is also continuing on Bloomington's Washington Street corridor, where a senior apartment complex is underway at the former Bloomington Junior High School, and a pizza place is headed for the former Mr. Quick location, Renner said. Number 9, what education will look like. Remote learning, in-person learning, a hybrid approach. Schools across central Illinois tried all three methods last year as the coronavirus pandemic created unprecedented challenges for teachers, students, and families. McLean County Unit 5 students will spend the first days after winter break learning remotely, but they are set to return to hybrid in-person learning starting the week of January 11th. Bloomington District 87 will keep students in full remote for 2 weeks after winter break. Starting January 18th, all students will be able to continue full remote learning or attend in person with a hybrid model. Both districts will be implementing enhanced cleaning and other protocols designed to limit the spread of COVID-19. Last year brought new technology and ways of communicating into K-12 schools across the country. While it's unclear to what extent schools will need to rely on online learning this year, it's unlikely that many of those lessons will continue to be useful in the year ahead. Colleges and universities also moved increasingly to online classes, with many embracing a shift to more remote learning. Institutions are expected to turn again to a mix of remote, in-person, and hybrid course models for the spring semester, and many are looking for ways to scale up on-campus testing. Number 10, going back to normal. Will things go back to normal in 2021? Eating in restaurants, going to church, working at offices, dancing at concerts, gathering with family members of all ages, when will we do these things again? Under Governor J.B. Pritzker's Restore Illinois plan, the state won't enter the final phase when gatherings of any size can be held and all sectors of the economy reopened until a vaccine or highly effective treatment is widely available or the elimination of new cases occurs over a sustained period. Though a vaccine is now available, Pritzker said its manufacturing and delivery to the public will take time. Exactly how much time remains unclear. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institutes of Health, offered some optimistic thoughts about 2021 in an online conversation broadcast Wednesday. He said the country could see some sense of normalcy in the fall if enough people are vaccinated. If the U.S. is diligent about getting many people vaccinated between April and July, I believe by the time we get to the early fall, we will have enough good herd immunity to be able to really get back to some strong semblance of normalcy. Schools, theaters, sports event, restaurants, I believe if we do it correctly, we'll be there by early fall, Fauci said. No one really knows what percentage of the population needs to be immunized to interrupt the spread of the virus, Fauci said. He guessed it would be somewhere between 70, and 85%. And from Sunday's paper, page A2, the headline reads, Federal Aid Saves Farm Income. Thanks to the government paying nearly 40% of their income, U.S. farmers are expected to end 2020 with higher profit than 2019 and the best net income in 7 years, the Department of Agriculture said in its latest farm forecast. Farmers faced challenges throughout 2020 that included the impact of trade disputes, low prices that drove down cash receipts for corn, cotton, wheat, chicken, cattle, and hogs, and weather difficulties set as drought in some areas and an unusual August windstorm stretching from South Dakota to Ohio that centered on Iowa. Farm cash receipts are forecast to decline nearly 1% to $366.5 billion, the lowest in more than a decade, measured in real dollars. Direct government federal payments save farmers' bottom line. Farmers overall saw a 107% increase in direct payments from 2009, when a third of net income came directly from the government. The impact of the money varies from one farm to another, depending upon whether a farmer owns the land, has significant capital to draw from, has manageable debt, and aggressively manages wide commodity price swings. The payment to one farmer could be a matter of life and death of that farm, and for another farm, maybe just makes it not quite as bad a year as it was going to be, and everywhere in between, said Mark Paustian, a farmer who raises hogs and grows soybeans and corn near Walcott in eastern Iowa. I've described it as, if you're drowning and somebody throws you a life preserver, you're not going to argue too much about grabbing a hold of it. Excluding USDA loans and insurance indemnity payments made by the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, farmers are expected to receive $46.5 billion from the government, the largest direct-to-farm payment ever. That includes $32.4 billion in assistance through coronavirus pandemic relief, food assistance, and Paycheck Protection Program payments to farmers. Additional support comes from more traditional revenue loss programs due to low commodity prices, compensation for trade disruptions resulting from tariff battles, and conservation programs assistance. Federal court bankruptcy data indicates 433 U.S. farms filed for reorganization as of September 30th, down from 454 during the same period, in the previous year. Overall, net farm income in the United States is expected to increase 43% from 2019 to $119.6 billion, the USDA estimated. One Northeast Iowa farmer said, without the federal money, it would have been difficult to make ends meet this year. But it began to feel like the government checks were motivated by politics from a president seeking support for re-election. Many top farm states voted for Trump again in November, including Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, Texas. Several, however, left Trump to vote for Democrat Joe Biden, including Wisconsin, Michigan, and Georgia. Volatility definitely causes volatility, someone said, and so if we can get these free trade agreements set up that are better and not as confrontational but still benefit both sides, that just benefits agriculture and rural America. This has been Rita Schulte with the first half hour of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, January 2nd, Sunday, January 3rd, and Monday, January 4th. I will return in just a few minutes with part two. So, bye.